It's Purple and Bold Podcast, another bonus episode from Pensacola, Florida. I'm Shane Metlin, reporting from the Sun Belt basketball tournament, where if you haven't noticed, James Madison is having a very good week as we get ready to start our second week of Sun Belt basketball in Pensacola. But the Dukes, both Dukes teams arrived for the quarterfinals and won quarterfinal games, the men and the women. Followed that up with semifinal victories, and one school survives to have two teams playing for conference championships here on Monday in Pensacola, and that is James Madison, the Dukes, going for one of those rare feats for it happens. Troy did it a few years ago in the Sun Belt, but it's always a good march at a school if both teams are playing for a chance to play in the NCAA tournament. And a little bit of a unique situation at Sun Belt where they do it same day, same location. So the JMU fans that made the trip down to Pensacola this year, and there are noticeably a lot more of them this year than last year. I think as JMU gets situated into the Sun Belt, learns the ropes a little bit, and also had very good years in both men's and women's basketball, there's a good amount of Duke fans in the building the last couple days, especially for those men's games. And they're getting their money's worth making a trip down to see two teams play for championships here on Monday. Let's break down a little bit the path for each team to get there. For the JMU women to start, they come down in the quarterfinal round, and they take care of Southern Miss. Really, you know, dominated that one from the start. In tournament basketball, it's not uncommon for a team to go on a pretty big run early, kind of put a game away, and cruise to the finish, which is probably how you would describe what the JMU women did on my days are getting mixed up, but that was in the quarterfinal round when they arrived here in Pensacola. The women, they follow that up in the semifinals with a harder-fought victory against Louisiana. The seventh-seeded Ragin' Cajuns had previously upset Troy in the quarterfinal round to set up that matchup. They had given JMU all they wanted in Harrisonburg earlier this year. Overtime victory for JMU there. And it was another hard-fought game. Actually, closer than I was expecting, honestly. You hear and saw the Troy-Louisiana game. That was a really hard fought game. That was one that came down to the wire. There's a lot of emotions involved in that matchup, whether it be those two coaches have known each other for a long time, or were rival high school coaches actually before they became rival college coaches in the same conference, have faced each other dozens and dozens of times throughout their careers. And, you know, some players transfer between those two schools. The roster overlap there. You could tell it meant a lot to both teams in that game. Louisiana pulled it out. And honestly, they were celebrating like they'd won the championship after beating Troy. I was expecting a little bit of a letdown from the Cajuns, honestly, getting into the semifinal round. But they didn't. They regrouped, and they gave JMU all they wanted in the semifinals. Brandy Williams for Louisiana was really good in that game. JMU struggled offensively at times. They struggled with the pressure defense from the Cajuns at times. Louisiana was team that will, mix in playing some full court defense. They really get after it. They're a smaller team, but they really try. Sean O'Regan, the James Madison coach, has talked a lot about how, his team just isn't the type of team that goes for a lot of steals. They want to play defense, stay in front of you, make you take a bad shot, and rebound. And JMU did rebound yesterday. They doubled up the Cajuns on the boards. Third straight game with more than 50 rebounds. They're doing what they do to try to advance here. They're playing their game, which was part of the reason they had success. But Louisiana also played their game. They forced a lot of turnovers, especially in the first half. Against JMU, helped them stay close. And that game was just close down the stretch. Even though JMU stretched it to double digits multiple times, each time they did, Louisiana came back and was really able to make it a game that wasn't decided until right down the stretch. The very good sign for James Madison was that Susha Kozlova has come back from her injury. She played in both tournament games after missing the final six regular season games. kind of dipped her toe into the water. In the quarterfinal game against Southern Miss, they didn't need a lot from her. She, I think, was 1 for 5 from the field. A little bit rusty, but was moving, getting up and down the court fine. She was moving well. Like I said, just kind of needed that game to get back into the swing of things. She said after the Louisiana game that she got her rhythm back. And you could tell. She scores in double figures, 12 points. She grabs 7 rebounds. You know, really right along her season averages, looked like herself. And, you know, probably even most important is by the end of the game, she's drawing heavy double teams from the Louisiana defense, which, you know, opens up things for some other people. And you see, even after Peyton McDaniel, who is also having a pretty solid game, fouls out late, you see those double teams open things up for some other people. And, you know, Jamia Hazel and Carol Miller are able to get the ball, hit their foul shots. Somebody, Olivia Mullen, somebody who didn't play a whole lot in that game, just I think for matchup reasons, comes in, had only played a couple minutes going into the fourth quarter, and she hits a 3-pointer that was really key early in that, kind of turned the momentum back towards JMU, and they were able to, you know, finish that one out. You know, I think that's a huge key for JMU as they go into today's championship game against Marshall. And, you know, I think this, on the women's side, this was the matchup we were kind of building towards for a while now. And a JMU on the women's side was the number 3 seed. They had a little bit of a lull, probably about 2/3 of the way through the season, sort of dropped them out of contention for the number 2 seed. But they are the only team in the Sun Belt that has beaten Marshall. They beat Marshall on their home floor. You know, I think they're confident that they are capable of beating the Thundering Herd again, but it's a huge challenge. This is a really, really good Marshall team that even when you think you've got them kind of backed into a corner, they always seem to get out of it. You go back to their semifinal game against ODU. ODU looked so good early on in that one. And, you know, they build a double-digit lead against Marshall, and it just kind of slowly unwinds on the Monarchs in the second half. And, you know, I'm standing there next to an assistant coach in the Sun Belt while that game's going on, just chatting a little bit and, you know, kind of, you know, casual talk like, hey, can you believe this? ODU looks so good early on. And his response was, this is what Marshall does. It's what they play, that full court press. And they can hit a bunch of threes in a hurry. And so even when things aren't going the Herd's way, the tide of a game can turn so fast when they're playing with that style that it's never really over. And that's something JMU's got to guard against today. They've been prone to getting off to hot starts since they've got to Pensacola, and even going back to last year here in Pensacola where the JMU women won the conference championship. They've gotten hot starts in games. They've shot the ball well in this arena. Peyton McDaniel in particular seems to really love shooting in this arena down here at the Pensacola Bay Center. And so I think, you know, we'll see how JMU gets off to a good start, if they can get off to a good start. But they can't rely on having put a game away, even if they build a lead against Marshall, because, you know, players like Abby Beeman, who is the Sun Belt Player of the Year on the women's side, very capable of sparking some runs. And they've got so much depth. They'll play 10 people. They'll run in and out. They run that press. And, you know, you can just kind of feel things snowballing when Marshall gets going against a team. And JMU was able to handle that much better the second time those two teams played this year. Because it's really what happened to JMU in Harrisonburg and the loss to Marshall. JMU mixed it up. They play some zone. They forced Marshall into, they kind of took away the layups. They took away the three-pointers and said, hey, if you can beat us from 15 to 17 feet, go for it. And really didn't. And that was kind of the way JMU was able to hand Marshall its only loss in conference play. The rubber match today, Monday afternoon, in Pensacola between those two teams will be for everything a Sun Belt team plays for. They're going for conference title. Winner goes to the NCAA tournament. It's been a magnificent first year for Kim Caldwell, coming up from a Division II Glenville State and making Marshall this kind of team this fast. But JMU's got players that have won this in the past, are going for back-to-back conference championships. Lots of players who have played in the NCAA tournament, whether it be a Peyton McDaniel, Susha Kozlova, Heaven Bristow, actually played against JMU in the NCAA tournament last year, and now is transferred from Ohio State. And so she's got that kind of experience under her belt, has played in big moments. And I think, you know, this team's probably going to be ready for the moment, but they're playing a very, very good Marshall team. Be very interested to see how that ends up shaking out. That's the first of two games in Pensacola in the nightcap, a game that's been bumped up to ESPN, the flagship station from ESPN2, because ESPN seems to love the Dukes. The JMU men will take on four-seeded Arkansas State in the men's championship game, starting at 6 o'clock here, local Central Time in Pensacola. That's 7 o'clock on the East Coast, where I think the majority of the people listening to this probably are. Huge, huge opportunity for JMU, because even at 30-3 on the season, 29 of those wins against Division I opponents, more road wins than any other team in the country. I think they're up to 12 in a row now as they advance to the finals. The team's still very on a precarious NCAA tournament bubble. If they happen to lose this championship game tonight against a red-hot Arkansas State team that took out the top-seeded Appalachian State Mountaineers. So let's start with that game. Arkansas State just looked very, very good, much better than their most recent game against App State. They have a guard in Caleb Fields who is just so capable of carrying that team. You know, you look at App State, they honestly struggled a bit throughout their shorter-than-expected tournament run. They play Georgia Southern in the conference semifinals. That's a game that went right down to the wire. In fact, went to overtime. Second time the Eagles and the Mountaineers have played an overtime game this year. Give a lot of credit to Georgia Southern for, despite a really, really rough start to the Charlie Henry era in Statesboro, didn't win a non-conference game. They were very, very competitive in conference play and took App State to overtime twice. They built a big lead against JMU that they couldn't hang on to, but they were very, very competitive against really good teams as the season wore on. And what you saw against App State in both games of this tournament was those teams put the ball in the hands of their very best player. Tyron Moore had a huge game in the quarterfinals and almost single-handedly lifted Georgia Southern to a win there. Couldn't quite get it done. App State was able to kind of limit him late in regulation and in overtime. But then you see a lot of the same thing from Arkansas State in the semifinals with Caleb Fields. He's a guy who can score. He's a guy who really distributes 20-some points yesterday to go along with six assists. And they just put the ball in his hands and let things happen. And, you know, he didn't hit the game-winning shot. That was, you know, Freddie Hicks does that for the Red Wolves, who, you know, somehow is able to kind of get free for a leaning shot at the buzzer to win that one. App State had played with fire a little bit here late in the season, playing a lot of close games. And, you know, I'd asked Dustin Kearns about how they were able to win so many close games, and they have a lot of really good veteran players. Guys like Donovan Gregory tend to make a lot of plays late in games, and he did again on Sunday in the semifinals. Just Arkansas State made one more, and the Red Wolves now are red hot going into this matchup with JMU. They were the number four seed in the conference tournament. They earned that double bye, so nobody really has an advantage as far as, you know, how the schedule breaks down. I think that was something of an advantage for JMU against Texas State in the semifinals, that Texas State, another team that was red hot coming in, they played their fourth game of the week. And, you know, at times I think it just saw some things that probably benefited JMU in that regard. You know, Texas State missed some free throws, you know, more than they typically do, especially early in the game. They fouled more than they typically do. You know, for as athletic as a team as they are, and not to say that they play very aggressive. They'll put some teams on the line, but the disparity in the free throws, I think, had a lot to do with that being a tired Texas State team that was trying to just keep up with a fairly fresh and athletic JMU team. So we see that happen. JMU, not their best game in the semifinal round, to be honest, but that was a kind of hard fought game you kind of expect with Texas State. You got to grind it out with them. They do things like just, you know, poke and reach at the ball. When you get a defensive rebound and you want to get going in transition, they do that. They don't. And then they're athletic. They're more athletic than they were last season. You know, a lot was made of it being kind of a repeat for Texas State, where they had some struggles in the regular season, end up getting the 11th seed in the tournament, and then make a deep run to the semifinals. Two years in a row, the Bobcats did that. Although I think it's a little different look for Texas State this year. They played really, really well down the stretch, won 10 of 13 going into the semifinals against JMU, and had gotten healthy in January. You know, talking to some coaches here in Pensacola, they really thought that the semifinals at the moment, you know, as we got into the tournament, that it truly was the four best teams in the league right then that made the semifinals. They were including Texas State in that, even as an 11th seed, that those, you know, based on how they're playing right now, they would have Arkansas State, they would have Texas State as the toughest teams to beat, right there along with JMU and App State. And it played out that way. You know, got like, you know, Sykes for Texas State was a guy who was missing early in the season. Once they got them back, they became very good. Brandon Love, can't say enough about how impressive his game, offensively anyway, against JMU was on Sunday. Guy just was not missing. He was getting to the rim. He was following shots with dunks. He was slashing down the lane, taking passes and getting to the rim, and just finishing. I think that was, you know, the real thing. He wasn't great on the boards. You know, had a hard time getting, I think, physical with a guy like TJ Bickerstaff, but Bickerstaff also had a little bit of tough time with his quickness underneath the basket. And, you know, he was a guy who I think probably more than anybody kind of kept Texas State, along with Dontre Horn, who also had a really good game. But those two guys kind of kept Texas State in it throughout, even as, you know, JMU, they built a 15-point lead early, not early, but, you know, late in the second half, they built a 15-point lead. Xavier Brown was red hot to begin the game, hit three really deep threes to give JMU a 15-point lead. And then by late in the game, it's tied. And JMU responded well to that. The team that didn't panic at all, they showed a lot of what I think, you know, I was giving App State a lot of credit for right up until their loss, was that even in those situations where, okay, teams tied it on us, a team has taken the lead, or, you know, we've been behind, whatever, those two teams, both JMU and App State, have always kind of had this, like, thought in their brain that, hey, we are better than the team that we're playing, and we're going to make plays, and it's not time to panic quite yet. And they've done that, and you got to give Noah Friedel a ton of credit in that game. 28 points, the most he scored in a JMU uniform, at just the right time when Fat Edwards, TJ Bickerstaff, Julian Wooden all were having a little trouble getting the ball to go down the hole, although all hit some big shots late in the game to help JMU hold off Texas State. But it was Noah Friedel, whether you're talking about first half, second half, or late in the game, where he hits, you know, several free throws down the stretch to hold that one off. However you want to talk about it, Noah came up huge and kind of lifted JMU to a close victory against Texas State to set up the championship game against Arkansas State, which is coming up 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN here from Pensacola, Florida. JMU going for its first conference tournament championship since 2013, trying to get back to the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2013. If they can take care of Arkansas State, then they don't have to worry about Selection Sunday, about making a case for an at-large bid, about the whole debate about scheduling and mid majors versus high majors and all of that. If they win, they'll be 31-3 and going to the big dance and can really just kind of control everything today if they can take care of an Arkansas State team that they beat once on the road this year. Freddie Hicks didn't play a ton in that game. He was still coming back from injury. So I expect a close one. I expect, you know, both teams to, you know, really come out firing and playing well. I expect a quality game. And, you know, we'll see what ends up happening here later today. But in the meantime, I really appreciate you tuning in. I will be back with another bonus episode to recap what happens in these championship games between the Dukes and the Red Wolves on the men's side, the Dukes and the Thundering Herd on the women's side, JMU going for two conference championships in one day. Big day for JMU and a big day for the Purple and Bold podcast. And, you know, thanks for listening, and we'll be back.